Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Erev and Daf Pei Vav. We're holding on Daf Pei Hei Amid Beis at the two dots, three lines from the end of the page. Today's share is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. We thank him very much for the continued sponsorship. So we're holding again three lines from the end of the page. The Gemara is going to define what is a Tfisas Yad of a Balabayis, what qualifies as a Tfisas Yad of a Balabayis, where the renter or the person who's currently residing in the house is not going to have to partake in the Eruv because the Balabayis still retains, the guy who owns the house still retains rights in that home, and therefore the renter is Ki'ilu, he's not a Balabayis, he's not one of the members of that chatzer. Then the Mishnah on Amud Aleph, the first Mishnah on Amud Aleph, is going to discuss the impact of someone who is not home for Shabbos. Does he have to participate in the Erev? Does he aser on the other Bnei HaChatzer? Does it make a difference how far away he went? Does it make a difference if he's a Jew or a non-Jew? We've discussed this earlier in the Masechta, but this is the Mishnah that we kept on referring to earlier in the Masechta. Then the next Mishnah is going to talk about a bar between two chatzeros, and under what circumstances you're allowed to fill up water from the bar. What kind of mechitza in between the two chatzeros or inside the bar is going to be necessary? And that's going to lead us into a discussion of a mechitza tluya, which is going to go over to Amud Beis. And we're going to talk about mechitza tluya as it pertains to eruv chatzeros, as it pertains to sukkah. If a mechitza does not go all the way down but is hovering in the air, is that considered a valid mechitza or not? So let's begin three lines from the bottom page. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Yesham Tfisas Yad. So he said if the Balabayis still has a Tfisas Yad, then the guy who's living there is not going to aser on the Bnei HaChatzer because the Balabayis is it's his house. So says Mara, Hechidami Tfisas Yad, what qualifies as a Tfisas Yad that the Balabayis is still keeping some stake in that house? Kigon Chatzeru Shal Ben Bunyos. It's like the Chatzer of Ben Bunyos. Ben Bunyos was a very rich man and he had a lot of homes and he used to lend out his homes in his Chatzer to other people. But because he was such a rich man, he also had lots of furniture and lots of kalim, and he would keep kalim in all of these homes. So since it had his stuff in all of these homes, that's enough of a tfisas yad that the tenant is not going to have to participate in the eruv. Says the Gemara, Ben Bunyas also came to Rebbe. Amalu panu makom leben me'amana. When Ben Bunyas would come to Rebbe, they would say, clear out space for the guy who has 100 mana. Meaning he would identify him by his bank account. He would say he's the one who has me'amana. So also in the shachrina, and then when another person came who was also rich to Rebbe, Amar Lahu, he would say, Panu Makom Leben Masayimana. He would say, oh, that guy was was worth $100 million. This guy's worth $200 million. So clear out space. So Amar Lefan of Rebbe Shmuel, Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe, Aviv Shalze, Yeshal Elf Sinus Biyamu, Connect an Elf Ayaros Biyabasha. So Rebbe Shmuel, Rebbe Yossi told Rebbe, he said, you should know, this guy's father, Ben Bunyas' father, has 1,000 boats by Yam, and he has 1,000 cities by Abasha, because he was very, very rich. So Amalo, next time you see his father, maybe let him know that if he's so rich, he shouldn't dress his child like someone who's only a little bit rich. He should make sure that the child is wearing appropriate clothing as befits his station in life, and then I won't make that mistake, because apparently Ben Bunyas was actually richer than the other guy, who he called Ben Masayim Mana. Rebbe Mechabit Ashirim. What you see from the story is that Rebbe clearly used to be Mechabit Ashirim. He would honor those who are rich. Why would he honor people who are rich? Is that something worthwhile to honor? And not only Rabbi Akiva Mechabit Ashirim. Rabbi Akiva was Mechabit Ashirim. So the Gemara gives a little explanation. Kedidarsh Rava Bar Mari, Rava Bar Mari Darshan, the Pasuk in Tehillim, Yeshev Olam Lefnei Elokim Chesed Vemes Man Yin Suruhu, where the Pasuk Pshat in the Pasuk is that David was davening for himself, that he should always be Yoshev in front of Hashem, and the Chesed and the Emes that he did will always be there to protect him, but we darshan an additional level of interpretation. When is the world going to be miskayim? Bizman shechesed yemes man. When there are ashirim who are always doing chesed and are providing food for aniyim. So yinsuru, that will protect the world. So the reason there were mechabit ashirim is because the zuchus of what the ashirim do, the tzedakah that they do, how they take care of the poor people, that zuchus is olam chesed yibana. That zuchus is going of the chesed is going going to protect the world. But still, Dafka Rebbe was Mechaber Ashirim, the Gemara highlights. Dafka Rebbe Akiva, just say that. You have to be Mechaber Ashirim. Why is it we're highlighting that Dafka Rebbe had this extra cover, Dafka Rebbe Akiva had this extra cover for Ashirim. So in Gilin HaShasri, Kivegar points out that the Maharil in the Likutim quotes that he heard from Maram Segel, that you could say that Rebbe himself, as we know, Rebbe himself was an Ashir Gadol. Rebbe was a great Anav, he was a great Ashir, the Gemara's at the end of Ksubas. So therefore, he got in the habit of being Mechabed Ashirim, so that other people will learn to be Mechabed him because he's an Ashir. Meaning he was so nervous that people were going to be Mechabed him because of his Torah, he made it a thing that everyone's Mechabed Ashirim, and that way, when people showed him Kavod, he said, oh, it's just for the money, it's no big deal. Meaning that way, he was able to write it off as something that was just about his money, and not about the fact that he was a Talmud Chacham, because he didn't want to receive any honor for his Torah. And you do find that a lot. You find that in Chazal, Dafka, the Amoraim, wanted to avoid any possible honor that they would receive on account of their Torah. So Rebbe was also interested in avoiding that. The Me'iri has a little bit different. The Me'iri also points out Rebbe was an Ashir, and he says it's because of the Midas HaNadivos that he had, how generous he was, so there were always Aniyim in his house. And not only Aniyim in his house, the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Yud Gimel and Beis says that the Mechamer of Rebbe was Asher Mishvor Malka, that even his employees were richer than royalty. And you see that the way he did tzedakah was not just to take care of people, to give people tzedakah, but to set them up where they themselves can become Ashirim. And Rebbe assumed, which is the highest level of tzedakah, that he makes them independent, that they no longer are going to need to rely on other people. So Rebbe assumed that all Ashirim do that. Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam give you money if it's not to help other people? So he naturally assumed. So he was Mechabir Ashirim, because Merovan Vasnuso, he was also a great Anav, Merovan Vasnuso, he thought that the way he handled his money was not unusual at all. That's the way everybody must handle their money. And therefore, he was Mechabir Ashirim because of the assumptions he made about other people. That's the Rebbe being Mechabir Ashirim. Now, there's a number of other points to be made over here. In this Maisa, the Gemara brought, this fellow's name was Bunyas Bar Bunyas, according to some of the Girsaos. We just have Ben Bunyas, but according to some of the Girsaos in Gemara, it's Bunyas Ben Bunyas, that he actually had the same name as his father. In Sefer Chasidim, he writes that the Goyim call their children after their father. There's John, and John the Second, and John the Third, John Junior, John the Third, whatever. They call the name after their father, but the Jews are makbid about this, so we don't do this. And he says, the Sefer Chasidim writes, and Yesh Makomos, that we don't even call after living people. We don't even name babies after living people, only after people who have already died. And the Chida in Bris Olam on the Sefer Chasidim writes that a simon for this is a Karubu Shmosam Ale Adamos. The pasuk says in Tehillim that we only call someone on after the name of someone Achar Kvuraso, after he's already been buried in the Adama. And he says, but certainly not to call after your own name while you're alive. That was not the Jewish minhag. We never do that. We don't name a baby after his father while his father's still alive. Even by the Sfardim, where they do name after living people, it's the Zaydi, it's the grandfather, it's the Saba that they name after. So that's the whole question in Halacha. Do you name after father's father first or mother's father first? Same question for Ashkenazim. Do you name after the father's side of the family first or the mother's side of the family? That, there's a split in minhagim. By the Sfardim, they name after the father's side of the family first. By the Ashkenazim, we name after the mother's side of the family first, typically, unless someone is mochel, or there's some particular reason to do otherwise. My uncle, Julius Berman, said that he was once talking to Rebbetzin Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik's mother, and she said to him, you notice anything strange about my son's name? And he says, strange about your son's name? His name is Yosef Dov. He was named after his great-grandfather, the Beis Halevi. Like, there's nothing strange about that. If the Beis Halevi is the great-grandfather, you name after him, right? He said, no, don't you realize? He was our firstborn, and he's named after the father's side of the family. Why do you think he was named after the father's side of the family? I never thought about it. I just assumed the Beis Halevi, that of course he can name after the Beis. She said, no, when I had him, Reb Chaim came to visit me, and Reb Chaim said, I want you to name after my father. And I said, no, I have the right to name after my side of the family. I'm not naming after your father. So Reb Chaim said, I'm going to be mochel the right of every other child. Every other child could be after your side of the family if you give me this one. She said, you have a deal? And she named the first one Yosef Dov, but then all the others brothers were named after the other side of the family. Okay, so if you make some sort of deal, then that's a different story. But that's the typical practice. The problem is that the Achronim point out that there are places in Yerushalmi and even in Bavli where we do find that people have the same name as their father. The Yerushalmi in Demai has Rabbi Madya ben Madya. Over here, according to some Girsas, there's Bunyas ben Bunyas. In Maseches Shabbos and Maseches Gittin, the Yerushalmi also has that Yossi, Rabbi Yossi ben Yossi, and he's also in the Bavli and Menachos as well. So what the Achronim suggest is that it must be that their father was dead, that they were born after the father already died. So then it's appropriate to name after the father. And the Hagos Makor Chesed on the Sefer Chassidim, he said, yeah, but that won't work for our sugya. Because if your gear says Bunyas ben Bunyas, what happened when he came with clothing that wasn't up to par? So Rebbe said, when you see his father, tell him you should dress him more nicely. What do you mean when you see his father? His father is already deceased. So either Rebbe didn't know that his father was already deceased, or maybe this is a raya that even if he's still alive, that apparently it was okay. It's also the Chavos Das, Rabbeinu Yaakov Milisa, the famous Nesivos HaMishpat, the Chavos Das was called Rabbeinu Yaakov. His father was Yaakov Moshe, and so it's a pella that this was not a thousand years ago. This is a couple hundred years ago that he was named the same name as his father. So in the Achronim, they quote the Maisa that happened was that his father got very sick, and then his father's name was Moshe, and he got very sick, and he had a dream that he's going to have a refuah shleima bizchus his great son Yaakov, and therefore they changed his name after he got better to Yaakov Moshe, because the zchus through which he got better is Yaakov. So that's why you had that unusual case where Yaakov Moshe was the father and Yaakov was the son. So that's obviously an unusual case. But what we also see from the story is that apparently there's a maila to wear nice clothing. The Mi'iri over here says that over here we see an Eitzah Tova for a Baal Midos that he should make sure that he wears appropriate clothing and not to be cheap when it comes to buying nice clothing, but it should be Lefi Ashro, that based on his station in life, he should wear the clothing that's appropriate for him. Normally you don't find that. In the Chazal you find a big day, a Beged Naki, that you should wear clean clothing, neat clothing, nice, but not Lav Davka, that it should be expensive clothing. But apparently from this Gemara, you see that there was an expectation that if a person is an Ashir, he should present himself that way. So the Meiri highlights that in a lot of places. The Gemara, based on the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos that Mechabdusai, right? Rabbi Yochanan used to call his Begadim Mechabdai, that which gives me honor. So apparently there's an association with Kavod and honor and clothing. That's what I heard from Rav Shechter in the name of Salvechik, that's why Dafka, that's the explanation of the Midag on Yom Kippur, to wear a kittel. Why do we wear a kittel on Yom Kippur? So a lot of different explanations, but there's a din of Kavod and Oneg normally for Shabbos and Yontif. Let's assume that both apply to both Shabbos and Yontif. So normally Oneg is done with Achila and Shtia. Kavod is done with Chabdusai, nice clothing. So on Yom Kippur, where you can't be Ma'aneg, you can't have Achila v'Shtia, we double down on the Kavod, right? We highlight the kavod, so you dafka wear a special beged, so a special beged that's just for Yom Kippur, that's specific, designated for Yom Kippur, because that's how we're showing the extra kavod for Yom Kippur. So that's a little bit about this little piece of Gemara. Okay, so says the Gemara Vaitin now on Tav Pei Vav Amaral. So what's the context of here? We're trying to figure out what is a tfisas yad in the chatzar. How much does the landlord have to have in that chatzar to say that the tenant is not really a player over here? He doesn't have to participate in the Erev. So one was that Barbunyas had a lot of houses and he kept stuff in each house, so that was enough. Says Rabbi Rechana Omar, Kigon Yosid Shal Macharisha. What he needs to leave in his house is something like the part of the plow, the Yosid Shal Macharisha. A Yosid Shal Macharisha is something that is absolutely muktzah, right? When they initially were misakin the Yisra of muktzah, initially they only answered Yosef Shal Macharisha and one other item, meaning this is like it's a classic example of something that's muktzah. So that's enough of a tfisas yad. Amar of Nachman Tana de Beis Shmuel Dover anitel b'Shabbos oser, that something that's not muktzah will aser on the guy the tenant who's living in the house from being metaltel in the chatzer, because that's not called. If it's not muktzah, what the owner is keeping in the house is not muktzah, then that's not called the tfisas yad in the house. Why? So the Rishonim explain, Rashi explains, because he could always throw it out of the house. He could always just choose to get rid of it. That's how the Bach understands Rashi, that any kli that's nitel b'Shabbos is not a tfisas yad, because whoever's living in the house could just remove it from the house. That's not a real tfisas yad. The Tur and the Rambam seem to assume that it's not that the tenant can throw it out, but the Baal HaBayis can take his kelim over the course of Shabbos. So the Bach just wonders, so what, that the Baal HaBayis can take his kelim? Since the Shoal or the Socher, if the Shoal and the Socher is not able to get rid of it, then the Baal HaBayis has a tfisas yad, meaning whatever freedoms the Baal HaBayis has to do as he pleases with his kelim does not limit his tfisas yad. Adrabba, if he has more freedom to do whatever he wants with his kelim, that enhances his tfisas yad. So in Sharetzion, the Mishabur writes in Shin Ayin, Sivkat and Ches, that the Bach holds that according to Rashi, even though mitzad adin, the Shoal is able to get rid of his kelim from the kelim of the Baal HaBayis from there, since there's something that's also letaltel b'Shabbos, the Shoal practically is not allowed to remove them, and therefore that's called the tfisas yad. Meaning, even though in terms of his rights as a tenant, he might be able to say, look, get your stuff out of here, I want to keep my own stuff here, but on Shabbos he can't do it. So since he can't do it on Shabbos, because it's muktzah, that's tfisas yad. Whereas the Rambam holds that that's only when the Baal HaBayis has reshus to keep his kelim there. And still they say that even that which is nitel b'Shabbos, the Baal HaBayis might remove from there, and therefore it's not a tfisas yad. Meaning that ultimately it's about whether the tenant has the right to tell the Baal HaBayis to get rid of your stuff from here. Okay, so if it's something that's nitel b'Shabbos, that's going to be oser. But davar she'eino nitel b'Shabbos, something that's aser to be metaltel on Shabbos, something that's muktzah, eino oser, will not aser on the Baal HaBayis from being metaltel on the chatzer, because that's called the tfisas yad. Tani nami achi yim yesh lo tevel. If you have tevel, payrolls that chumas ma'is have not been taken from, that's muktzah. Or yesh lo ashashes, you have a large piece of iron, which we assume is useless on muktzah. Kol davar she'eino nitel b'Shabbos, or anything that's muktzah on Shabbos, eino oser, that's not going to, the shovel is not going to, the tenant is not going to aser on the Baal HaBayis to be metaltel. But if he only has that which is nitel on Shabbos, then that's not called a tfisas yad. The Meiri understands that this idea that, what is it, one of the examples we gave is ashashes. So Rashi says, yeah, it's a chaticha gedola shel barzel, it's this large piece of barzel. So the Meiri says it's that according to that, it's not considered kelim she'eino nitel on b'Shabbos as far as it's only considered. It would only be considered kelim that are not nitzal on Shabbos if it's usher to be metal to them whatsoever, entirely. Meaning, if you had to give an example of muktzah, there are many categories of muktzah. For example, there's a kli shemalach del iser. A kli shemalach del iser is not unmovable. A kli shemalach del iser, you're allowed to be metaltel, letzorach gufo, letzorach makamo. Whereas something that's just muktzah machmas gufo, you're not even allowed to be metaltel, letzorach gufo, letzorach makamo. If it's just pure muktzah, you're not allowed to be metaltel, letzorach gufo, letzorach makamo. What level of muktzah do we need in order to say that this is something that's not going to be moved on Shabbos? So the Meiri is medayik from Rashi, from the fact that Rashi said ashashis is not a kli, it's just a slab of barzel, that's real muktzah. That can't even be moved. Letzorach gufo, letzorach makamo. But the Meiri says there are yesh mefarshim, that even a kli shemach del iser would be enough to be considered, that's muktzah enough to be considered that it's not going to be moved. Even though it's it technically can be moved based on the halacha, if you needed it or you needed the makam that it's occupying. The Tur in Siman Shin Ayin writes that if the Baal HaBayis has kelim that cannot be moved because they're so heavy that they're strictly speaking mutter to move on Shabbos, but it's not the derech to be metaltel them on Shabbos because they're so heavy, that's also called tfisas yad. Meaning the Tur is highlighting it's a matter of practicality. It's not a matter of whether you're permitted to move these items. It's a matter of can we expect that these items might be moved. And if it's something that's so heavy, then you cannot expect that the items might be moved. Now, sometimes an item that's very heavy becomes muktzah machmas kovdo. The Mishnah Berurah writes, we just learned in Smichas Chavar last week, the Mishnah Berurah writes that if you have a very heavy item, that if you want to move it, it's going to break. Because sometimes you have big pieces of furniture, that if they move it, they can break. Then it becomes muktzah machmas chesron kis. That also becomes a level of muktzah. The day after we learned that, I was in yeshiva, and I walked into Rabbi Bronstein's old office. Rabbi Bronstein was the administrator in yeshiva for decades, and he just retired this year. And at his retirement Zoom party, Rabbi Penner said, "Rabbi Bronstein, we're going to give you, we're going to ship to you your desk." It was a desk that he yarshin from Dov Lipschitz, I think, or something like that. It was like, you know, so it was a very valuable thing to him. So it was an old, decrepit desk, but, you know, so there's a great sentimental value. So I went and I saw the desk was still there. I said, "How come we didn't send it to Rabbi Bronstein?" He said, "They discovered it's going to cost over $2,000 to send the desk to him, because if you pick it up, the whole thing's going to fall apart." So sometimes you have like that furniture that if the second you move it, it's going to fall apart. Then it becomes muksa. Okay, new Mishnah now. So if someone leaves his house and goes to spend Shabbos in another city, whether it's a Nakri, whether it's Yisrael, he asks on the rest of the Bnei Chatzar. None of the Bnei Chatzar are allowed to be metalta because this fellow didn't participate in the Erev. Even though he's not home for Shabbos, it asks and everybody else. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's Shita, that even though the guy's not there, it's considered a Dira, and he asks on the rest of the Bnei Chatzar. Rabbi Kivega raises the question that we had back on Daf Samach Beis in the Gemara, that Rabbi Meir holds that a Dira that you don't live in is not considered a Dira, and the reason Rabbi Meir asks when the guy goes to live somewhere else is only a gezeira, that the Mishnah is talking where he went to a place close by where he can come back from there on Shabbos, and we're choshish that he might come back on Shabbos, and then they'll continue to carry in the chatzer. So Rabbi Kivega raises the question, why is it that Rashi's highlighting that it's not called a dira? The Gemara already explained, no, it is called a dira, and that it's called a dira, and that's why he asks. No, it's not called a dira. It's a gezeira that he might come back. So that's Rabbi Kivager's kasha on the Mishnayos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Oser. Rabbi Yehuda says that a dira that a guy is not living in is not called a dira, and therefore he doesn't aser on the other residents of the chaser. Rabbi Yossi Omer, depends. Nachri Oser, but Yisrael Eino Oser. Shein Derech Yisrael, love of B'Shabbos, that makes a difference whether he's a Nachri or Yisrael. If he's a Nachri, then he's going to aser because he's very likely going to come back on Shabbos. So just because he's not here when Shabbos starts, it doesn't mean that he's not going to be here, and therefore he's a real resident of this chatzar and al-Asr and everybody else. But Yisrael is away for Shabbos. He's away for Shabbos. He's not going to come back in the middle of Shabbos, and therefore he's not considered a resident of the chatzar for Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu v'niach beis of haluk lishpo seitzel bito ba'os ha'ir, even if he just went to his daughter in the very same city where he can very easily come back. It's right there. It's in the neighboring chatzar. He can walk back in the middle of Shabbos. Eino Oser, still he's not an Oser, he's not a resident of this Chatzar for this Shabbos, Shekvar Siyami Libo, because he made up his mind that he's spending Shabbos by his daughter, and if that's the case, once he made up his mind that he's spending Shabbos by his daughter, that's what we assume, that he's Siyami Libo, he decided that he doesn't want to be there for Shabbos, and we assume that he's not going to return. Rabbeinu Yehonasan writes that Rabbi Shimon is only matu this by Yisrael, because typically we stand by our commitments, but in Achri, even if he didn't intend on returning, might change his mind in the middle. They're more prone to changing their mind if things aren't going the way they want it to be going. The Meiri, and in fact, the Rambam paskens that way. The Rambam, the fourth paragraph of Chazerivin, paskens this halacha by Yisrael, like Rabbi Shimon, but by Nachri, he paskens like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shimon never made a distinction between Nachri and Yisrael. But so the Rambam must have been assuming that Rabbi Shimon's Shita is Dafka by Yisrael, where we have the right to assume that if he's going for Shabbos, he's going to stay for the entirety of Shabbos. Even if he's very nearby, we assume he's going to stay for the entirety of Shabbos. And Meiri quotes from a Rashba that even by a Nachri, Rabbi Shimon holds, that once he's gone for Shabbos, he's gone for the whole Shabbos, and he's not going to Aser. And the Ramah quotes such a Shita. What happens though if, let's say, you have a Nachri and he comes back in the middle of Shabbos? So he said he's not going to Aser because he's gone for Shabbos, but he comes back in the middle of Shabbos. So the Gemara said back on Samachem Beis that he asers, as Machlokes Rishonim, meaning, no, so that's not a Shaila. A Nachri might come back, that's the whole thing, is that a Nachri will always come back. So he's going to aser, obviously. What about a Yisrael that comes back in the middle of Shabbos? He wasn't expected to come back, and therefore we assumed he's not an issue over here. We can make the Erev Chatzeros without him. Now he comes back in the middle of Shabbos, unexpectedly. So now does it Aser and everybody else? So the Rashba quotes a Yesh Misha Omer, that he Asers and everybody else, just like a Nachri that's Bal Debeso on Shabbos. And then he quotes that the Ravid says that it's Eino Oser, or that he doesn't Aser. Why not? So the Rash writes that Yisrael, when Shabbos starts, we know that he's not destined to come back. So Shabbos Hol V'Hutra, Hutra. The fact that he came back later, it's not a Goyim Milsul Mafreya. Something new must have happened, but the determination of the Erev is made as things stand when Shabbos starts. That's the explanation of that Shita. Okay, so says the Mishnah now. Says the Gemara rather. Amarav halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. We pass on Rabbi Shimon that even if the guy is just next door, he's in the neighboring chatzar by his daughter in the same town, then nevertheless, we assume he's not coming back over Shabbos. V'dafka bito. We dafka gave an example in the Mishnah that he's at his daughter's house. Avol b'no lo. But if he's at his married son's house, then we cannot make an assumption that he's going to remain there for the entirety of Shabbos, because the assumption is that sometimes people don't get along so well with their children-in-law, and depending on which child-in-law gets upset at him, he may have to leave in the middle of Shabbos. So, Damri Inshi, Navach Bakalba, Ul, Navach Baguriata, Poke, that if a male dog starts barking at you, don't worry, you could stay there. It's not going to bother you. But if a female dog starts barking at you, then you better get out of there. So if you're by your son's house and the one that gets upset at you is your daughter-in-law, you better hightail it out of there and get back home. But if it's you're at your daughter's house and it's your son-in-law, so your daughter will talk some sense into your son-in-law and tell him to keep his mouth shut, and you can stay there for the rest of Shabbos. So that's that's why the Mishnah Dafka gave the example of Bito. Okay, says the Mishnah. New Mishnah now. This is about a bar that is shared by two chatzeres. Bar shebein shtei chatzeres ein memalim menu b'shabbos. You're not allowed to fill up water from the bar if the bar is right between two chatzeres, because you're being it's a bar that belongs to the other chatzer, and there's no eruv between the two chatzeres. Elam kinas lo mechitza gavasar tvachim. Unless you made a tent hafachai mechitza to separate the two sides of the bar, and that you can make, that mechitza can work. Bein milamata, bein mitoch ogno. So milamata means lower down in the bar, mitoch ogno means inside the cavity of the bar, but not as low down. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, beishamay omrim milamato, beisilil omrim milamayla. That beishamay says the mechitza has to be milamata, down low in the bar, and beisilil says milamayla, higher up. The Gemara is going to identify where in the bar we're talking about exactly is the mata and the maila. Amar Rabbi Yehuda lote mechitza gadol min hakol shebeinayim. He says mechitza in a bar is no, it can't be a more beneficial than the mechitza between two chatzeros, which goes over the surface of the bar, is not even in the bar at all. So apparently you don't even need a mechitza inside the bar. A mechitza that just runs over the top of the bar, that splits the two chatzeros, even that's good enough, says Rabbi Yehuda. So Amar Rav Huna, what do the words mean when we say the mata, the maila in the Mishnah? What are we talking about? So lamata, lamata mamish. It means you put it all the way down, right next to the surface of the water. Meaning it doesn't have to actually go in the water. It means down near where the surface of the water is. Lamaila, lamaila mamish. Lamaila means even way above the surface of the water, as long as it's inside the bar. Vizev zev a bar, but they're both talking about inside the bar. Rav Yehuda Amar, no, lamata is lamata min amayim. Lamata means even under the level of the water, all the way down. Lamaila is lamaila min amayim. Lamaila doesn't mean all the way at the top of the bar. It means right above the surface of the water in the bar. But it could be pretty deep down in the bar if the water only starts 20 tefachim deep into the bar. So you can have the mechitza, the bottom of the mechitza at that 20 tefach mark, and the top of the mechitza may only be 10 tefachim down into the bar. And it's not necessarily right by the lip of the bar. So it's machlokas what lamata, what lamaila means. Some of the rabbi rochel nabaye. Hadam Rav Yehuda lamata lamata min amayim. That which Rav Yehuda says lamata means lamata min amayim, meaning in the karka of the bar. Maisha lamata mamish talo. Why is it that a mechitza that's put near the water does not work? Darivi maya. Obviously, he holds that the problem with putting the mechitza above the surface of the water is that the water is still going to mix from one side. The mechitza not doing anything. It's not actually separating water from one side to the other. Well, by that same token, lamata min amayim nami harivi maya. Even if you put the mechitza all the way down at the bottom of the bar, but there's water that goes above the mechitza then, and the water is still going to mix over the mechitza. Samlei lo shmiya lachadam Rav Yehuda amar Rav umatabach mishum Rabbi Chiya tzarech sheyar roshen shel kanim lemalem min amayim tefach. Then no, the top of the mechitza has to have kanim of one tefach that protrude out above the top of the water, meaning it really needs to separate the water, that you need to have a tefach of mechitza that goes above the surface of the water if you hold that the mechitza needs to be mamish in the water in the bar. Tosfos points out that the Rosh Ekanim have to be visible outside of the water, That's in addition to the 10 tefachim that the mechitza has to be inside the water. Meaning you need 10 tefachim of mechitza in the water. Then in addition to that, another tefach, that's a heker that goes above the surface of the water. The Rif, however, disagrees. And the Rif says, no, the entire mechitza can be 10 tefachim, and one of those 10 tefachim should just be visible outside of the water. So the Rashba and the Ritva just point out that Tosfos is very difficult, because Tosfos is really saying what you need over here is an 11 tefach mechitza, and the Mishnah didn't make any mention of that. So why wouldn't the Mishnah mention this extra tefach if it's indeed an extra tefach? The Rif understands it's not an extra tefach, it's just a matter of placement of that tefach. Visu, and another kasha on Abaye, Hada Amar Rav Yehuda, Lamaila, Lamaila Min Amayim, that which Rav Yehuda says in the Mishnah that Lamaila means Lamaila Min Amayim, which means right above the surface of the water, Maishan Lamaila Mayim Shtalo, why is it that it's not good enough to have it all the way toward the top of the bar, toward the ground level, almost at the ground level, at the very top of the bar, Dariv Maya, because the water is going to mix without any hafsik mechitza that's recognizable in the water. Yeah, but by that same token, the malam and amayim nami arivi maya. If you put the mechitza right above the water level of the bar, the water is still going to mix. There's still no mechitza separating. Samlei lo shmi alach adetani Yaakov karchinoa shetzarich sheyishaka rashi kanim b'mayim tefach. Don't you know what Yaakov karchinoa says? That at least one tefach of that mechitza has to be in the water. So therefore, you do have a heker within the water that you're separating the two sides. Mistama karchinoa is a description of a physical characteristic that he had. He must have been bald or something, so they called him Yaakov Karchina. You have sometimes like that in the Gemara, that they gave people nicknames based on the physical characteristics, even though it's against the Gemara B'mitzia L'chara that you're not allowed to give people nicknames, but there are explanations in Akronim why certain nicknames are okay. But there must have been a few Yaakovs in the yeshiva, so they had to identify which one is which. So V'al Hadam Rav Yehuda Kara Arba Mataris B'churba, that which Rav Yehuda said that a korah that's four tefachim wide, that let's say you have a churva that does a house that's all bombed out, there are no mechitzos, but there's a beam that's four tefachim wide that runs from one wall to the other, so you're allowed to carry underneath that beam because you can look at the sides of the beam as if they are walls that go all the way down, and therefore you can carry underneath that area. Baravua korah arba'a mataris b'mayim, that if you have a four tefach wide korah running over a bor between two chatzeros, it's matter both chatzeros to fill up water from that bor. You view the sides of that korah as if they go straight down until the bottom of the bor. So the Gemara is asking from Rabba Baravua on Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a mechitza is not matir bor unless it's nikar bimayim. How could a korah work? It's certainly not nikar in the water. It's not in the water at all. So says Gemara, kazal tli liidach kisa umaisi. The Gemara is asking. After all, when you put the bucket in the water, the bucket's going to go straight over to the other side and bring water from the other side. There's nothing being mafsik in the bar itself. So answers the Gemara, kim l'rabanan de'indli mahalich yosem erba tefachim. The Rabbanan knew that if that beam was four tefachim wide, the dli is never going to travel that far to go all the way to the other side of the beam. The dli doesn't go more than four tefachim away. That's kim l'rabanan. They were experts in terms of the effects that buckets have in water with the weight of the bucket and the condition of the bucket. That's never going to go more than four tefachim apart. So I asked the Gemara, okay, but tachas korah miha arivi maya. But even underneath the korah, the water is mixing from the two sides of the korah. So there's no heker mechitza that's split between the two sides. So according to Rav Yehuda, it should be aser to fill the water unless you have a mechitza nikeres that's in the water. Elamishum dekalu shekilucham b'mayim. No, this is a special kula that we have dafka for water. That even if there's no mechitza nikeres in the water, you're allowed to fill up from the bar. And just like Rav Huna said, according to Beis Hillel, you can put a mechitza that's even way above the surface of the water in the bar. So that's a special kula you have for water, that the beam running across works as well. Meaning that, in the way Rashi understands, we're rejecting Rav Yehuda's statement before. Rav Yehuda said you need a mechitza nikeres, it needs to be shakua b'mayim, it needs to be in the water. What we're really saying is, no, we're not paskening that way. That we have a special kula when it comes to water, that you don't need any of that. That's totally unnecessary. In fact, Rashi says that you have to be goris in the Gemara, Ella, that it's an Ella because we're actually rejecting what we had said previously. Just like we had a discussion, question of a mechitza tuluya, if you have a mechitza that's hanging that doesn't go all the way down to the ground, is that enough to be matir carrying in the churban? So amalei ein mechitza tuluya matir sel b'mayim. No, it's a special kalu shekilacham b'mayim. Mechitza tuluya only works for water. It's a special kula we have for water, and therefore bar is also water, and the mechitza tuluya is going to work for a bar as well. Am Rabbi Yehuda mechitza. So then Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah that even a mechitza that runs above the surface of the bar is going to be enough to be mafsik between the two sides. So says Barchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehuda, Beshitas Rabbi Yosi Amara. When Rabbi Yehuda is so makil that he allows a mechitza tuluya, the wall that runs between the two chatzeros, to actually split the bar as well, he's following the sheet of Rabbi Yosi. Where did Rabbi Yosi say such a similar thing? Damar mechitza tuluya materes, afilu biyabasha. Rabbi Yosi holds that a mechitza tuluya works not only by mayim, even on yabasha, even on dry land. It's not, because we have a Mishnah, Meseches Sukkah. Sukkah's got nothing to do with water. It's about having the proper mechitzas of a sukkah. And what does the Mishnah say? Hamishal shel defanos milamada lamata. If the walls start at the schach and go down, but they don't go all the way down to the ground. Bizman shekvos minar shel tefachim. If they're more than three tefachim elevated off the ground, psula. Then the sukkah is going to be pasul. That's kadesh yizdakir gedi bebas rosh. A small animal can get underneath the wall, and therefore it's not an effective mechitza. Mimata lamayla. But if the walls start at the ground level and they go up, but they don't quite reach the schach, sim gvos asar tefachim kshera. As long as they rise 10 tefachim above ground level, they're kosher. So they don't have to reach the schach. So when you're talking about mechitzos that don't reach the floor, that's no good. It's got to get within 3 tefachim of the floor. But about not reaching the schach, that's fine. That's the Tanakam. Rabbi Yosi Omer, kshem shemilamata lemaila asara, kach milamata lemata asara. No, just like a 10 tefach mechitz is good enough even if it doesn't reach the schach, a 10 tefach mechitz is good enough even if it doesn't reach the floor. That's Rabbi Yosi Shita, that a mechitza tluya, even by Abasha, is good enough. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, who's so makel on the mechitza that runs over the bar, as splitting the bar, because his mechitza tluya is following that shita of Rabbi Yosi. Says Mar Velohi, Velo Rabbi Yehuda Savarlak Rabbi Yosi, Velo Rabbi Yosi Savarlak Rabbi Yehuda. But in reality, these two shitos are not connected to each other at all. Rabbi Yehuda Lo Savarlak Rabbi Yosi Adkan, Lo Kam Rabbi Yehuda Ela Beruvi Chatzeros. Why is Rabbi Yehuda willing to be makel on a mechitza tluya by the two chatzeros with the bar in between them? That's because we're talking about Eruv chatzeros drabanan, where the whole concern is only drabanan. The whole thing is a rishus hayachid. So the whole issue of taking water from the bar anyway is only a din drabanan. So he's willing to rely on a mechitza tluya of sukkah daraisa low, but he would never rely on it for sukkah, which is daraisa. And on the flip side, the Rabbi Yosi said, "Look, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi would reject Rabbi Yehuda." Ad kan lo kam Rabbi Yosi ela b'sukkah disraseyu. Rabbi Yosi is willing to rely on a mechitza tluya in a sukkah where it's only a mitzvah sasei. If you don't eat in sukkah, you don't sleep in sukkah, you're in violation of mitzvah sasei. Aval Shabbos disr skilahu. But Shabbos, which is nisr skila, if you were mechal Shabbos on a daraisa level, it would be skila. So all in yanim of Shabbos have a certain chumra to them, even those that are only drabanan. So lo amar. So Rabbi Yosi would not say that a mechitza tluya would work. The Ritva points out that over here you see that a mechitza tluya does work on a daraisa level, that it's only a din drabanan, because if on a daraisa level it would not be considered a mechitza as far as Shabbos, then even as far as sukkah would not be considered a mechitza, it would not be a valid mechitza. Because by a daraisa, you can't be mechalik between, meaning whether it's a valid mechitza daraisa, you can't say, it's a valid mechitza daraisa for a mitzvah saseh, but not for a mitzvah lo saseh, not for a chiyuv skila. That svara doesn't make sense. It must be that the whole thing is drabanan. And where did the rabbanan see the need to really clamp down and to be machmir? That's dafka in inyane Shabbos, but maybe not in inyane sukkah. V'im tomar, and if you're going to say that since Rabbi Yosi does not say mechitza tluya's matir outside of sukkah, only by Shabbos, he's not going to be matir by Shabbos, also ma'isa shenasa b'tzipura p'minasa. Well, when they relied on a mechitza tluya in Tzipori, with the famous ma'isa that happened in Tzipori, who were they following if Rabbi Yosi doesn't allow a mechitza tluya on Shabbos? Lo al pi Rabbi Yosi, el al pi Rabbi Shmuel bir Rabbi Yosi nasa. It was not Rabbi Yosi, it was Rabbi Shmuel bir Rabbi Yosi that they were relying on. What was the ma'isa? Dechias ravdimi amar pamacha shachu v'lo aviyu sefer Torah mibod yom. One time they forgot to bring a sefer Torah from Erev Shabbos. And lemachar, meaning they used to not keep the sefer Torah in shul because a guy would break into the shul and would vandalize it. They used to not have these big giant safes where they would keep the sefer Torah. Obviously the best thing is to keep a sefer Torah in Aron Kodesh in a shul, but they couldn't do it for the protection of the sefer Torah. That takes priority. So they forgot to bring the sefer Torah to the shul on Erev Shabbos. So lemachar, parsu sadin al amudim ve'viu sefer Torah v'karobo. So they set up cloths on amudim, on posts, so that they were able to sort of block out out all the other houses in the chatzer, and there was a direct line from the house where the Sefer Torah was kept to the shul with these mechitzos made out of sardinim in between them, and they brought it to the shul that way, and they read from the Sefer Torah. And apparently that was a mechitza tliya, and they relied on that mechitza tliya. So says Mara, wait a second, parsel l'chadchila mishari, they're allowed to just hang up walls on Shabbos? Vaha kol modim shein osan ol arai b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to make an ol arai b'Shabbos. You're allowed to be mosif on an ol arai on Shabbos. If the ol exists, you're allowed to add to it, but you're not allowed to create an ol arai on Shabbos. And we assume mechitzos are included in ol arai. It's actually two days what the proper girsa is, but according to this girsa, that mechitzos are included in ol arai. Ela matzus adin prusin ala mudim ve viu sefer Torah v'karubav. No, it's not that they made the mechitzos on Shabbos. They found these mechitzos were already made, but the mechitzos didn't reach all the way down to the ground. So they were mechitzos tlios, and they relied on those mechitzos tlios to bring the Sefer Torah on Shabbos and to read from it. Bezhem, tomorrow we'll pick up with Amar Rabbah.